Sprint cars.
Super late models.
Thunder cars.
Modifieds.
World of Outlaws.
Archives.
It's all here.
Welcome to Race Time Radio. Covering dirt to asphalt.
On races, famed short tracks.
All the way to the high banked oval.
This is Race Time Radio.
Come on now,
here's your host, live from the Racetime Radio Studio, it's Smokin' Joe Chisholm.
Excellent, buddy, excellent.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Racetime Radio. How you doing tonight? Sure glad you could stop in and join us for the next 2 hours here. We'll talk racing here across Canada and the U.S., and tonight's going to be a totally different show. Sure hope you can jump in there and join us here tonight, as I did not stack the show up with a full lineup of guests. Instead, what you've got here tonight is Junior and I here in the studio. Junior suffering with a cold, and just like a true trooper, he's going to be on here with us. You feeling okay, buddy?
Yeah, I'm fighting hurt tonight. I'm going to be, you know, down and out a little bit here, but what a great show today. We got a chance to sit back and watch some Martinsville action, you know, for the cup race today, and then as well the truck race yesterday. So it wasn't a weekend without racing up here.
No, it wasn't. Short track deluxe.
It was, for sure, and arguably my favorite weekend of the year. It did not disappoint. I don't think the timing could have got any better. As you queued up the, you know, the intro for tonight's show, Martin Truex crossed the line, taking the checkered flag for tonight's race. So, what a great event weekend, and I can't get over how cool Martinsville is.
Joey Logano seemed like he was coming in that race. I gotta admit here, I've been suffering a little bit here in the studio this weekend too, and today it was like someone unplugged me, and I went totally out.
Yep.
I only caught little fragments of the race, but I did catch, the last 50, 75 laps. And Joey Logano up into the fence with a little help from his friend, the number 11, by the look of it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I had to go down and pick up tires. But that's what it is at Martinsville, right? Close quarters racing, and contact is the name of the game.
Well, it is, for sure. And, you know, it's half-mile racetracks, you know, they're all over North America. And, you know, you think here in Ontario, we think about Delaware Speedway is an iconic half-mile. You know, you think about New Smyrna. You think about, you know, different tracks like that on the half-mile category. Martinsville is nothing like that. It is very tight on both ends, very long straightaways. They get hauling the mail down the straightaways there. But they basically stop in the center of the corner because you need to. You need to get through the end. And it's a rhythm track where you need to get on the brakes hard. You need to let the car roll through the center and then go up off. And, you know, it always, you know, attracts a lot of contact. Any half-mile racing does.
Yeah.
It's you're fighting for the bottom. It's not, you know, a bull ring style like you would see at, you know, we equate bull ring racing up here in Canada to a track like Sauble Speedway or Full Throttle, or even, you know, Scotia Speed World
sure.
is a tight small track.
Sure. PEI, another
PEI
one.
PEI as well, yeah, yep. Bull ring. And then even, you know, think about some of the tracks that the NASCAR Pinty Series goes to. Autodrome Chaudière is a full on bull ring.
Can't get much tighter than
you
that.
Can't,
and flat.
Edmonton as well. Well, no, Chaudière is not.
Oh, Chaudière's
flat.
Not. Right.
It's very good.
I'm thinking of St. Eustache.
High banks at Chaudière, but you know, you look at the bull ring style. You have the high speeds of a conventional half mile because of the long straightaways at Martinsville, but then you also have the really tight quarters in the corners, and that's what creates good racing to me. I love when the drivers can't get away from one another.
Yeah.
You know, I would much rather go watch a race at a track like Martinsville or a track like Edmonton, you know, super tight, super small. You can't get away from one another. I used to love watching the Barrie Speedway races with the NASCAR Pinty Series, the Canadian Tire Series at the time, the Oscar Super Late Models there. You know, a really tight track. Now, anybody who has to pay for the body panels don't like tracks like that, right?
Because it usually costs a body.
It usually does.
One little mistake can cost the whole field a dent or two.
Exactly.
Or more.
Some of the most exciting moments for me, you know, at a racetrack as a fan, as a spotter, you know, as a track official, we're on tracks that were super tight and very technical to get around. And, you know, as a fan, I get up for races like that. You know, there are certain merits to a high speed track, you know, a high speed short track like a Bristol, or if you're going to call it a short track, Iowa Speedway. You know, I like the style of racing at a track like Iowa. I like the style of racing at a track like Richmond, you know, or even like a high speed half mile like Bristol, or Winchester, you know, those types of racetracks. But I get excited and I love, so I like the other ones. I love tracks like Martinsville, you know, tracks like Edmonton and those.
And the cool part is you have been to Martinsville. You've been to a lot of the racetracks on the NASCAR Cup scene. Of course, you were down there for 3 years and with two race teams that you traveled around. You got to all but, what, two tracks that are on the NASCAR circuit?
All but three, actually.
Three?
So, yeah, I never got to Vegas, never got to Atlanta. And where else? Dover. I never got to Dover.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
But
I got to
see
every
the
one.
Cup Series on a half mile racetrack, it's got to be pretty daunting.
Oh, it's wild.
Yeah,
it's really cool. But you know, I would equate the racing, the Cup Series style racing, because it's long and drawn out. You know,
right? Long races.
You know, you've got a 500 lap race. One of the most exciting races that I've ever watched at a short track was the truck race at Martinsville. You know, I was there for the truck race. I'm going to say four times,
right.
Watching the trucks and they get after it. You know, it's a short race and very similar to that of a NASCAR Pinty's race at Barrie or a NASCAR Pinty's race at Edmonton, really.
Short, got to go, got to get results now. Track position is everything.
And, you know, contact always breeds a little bit of controversy. But when you go into the race expecting the contact, it takes a really crazy move in order to spark that fire, you know, that anger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where at a racetrack like a Delaware Speedway, any contact you're going to be pissed off because you're so on edge, right? Like you've got the ability to wreck at the drop of a hat, so it creates a lot of fire, you know, in that aspect. But on a short track like Martinsville, guys are having fun when they're putting the bumper to each other. You know, same with Edmonton. I watch guys like Donald Teague this year. One of the coolest moments, going back and hit rewind on the 2019 season, was watching Donald Teague, the 3 car, the 18 of Alex Tagliani, the 3 of Jason Hathaway, the 24 of Donald Teague, and you got to loop into that mix the 22 and the 34. Of Jamie Krizek and Marc-Antoine Cameron. The racing that they had, and I know we talked about it last week on the show, but at Edmonton International Raceway, it was second to none. You couldn't get a better race. Now, Ranger and Dumoulin were checked out, you know, out front. It wasn't a race for the lead. It was a race for third through seventh, and they were all over one another. Contact was just part of the game.
Yeah.
And one guy would move each other. One guy would move the guy in front of him, get the position, and then the guy behind them would move both of them. And it was really exciting to watch. And, you know, the fans were going crazy for how they were racing each other. Was any of it dirty? No.
No.
That's the coolest part about it.
It's just short track contact racing.
Exactly. And none of it was, you know, they didn't drive in from 5 car lengths back chasing the guy to wreck him.
Right.
they were making contacts door to door. They were making contact, you know, nose to quarter, and weren't wrecking each other, but they were doing everything but. And it showed how much of a premium track position has, you know, and it was just such exciting racing. And I think that we've seen that probably six times throughout the season, in one place or another, in the Pinty series,
right?
Where you know, the guys were all over one another. Some guys left the racetrack pissed off. Some guys left the racetrack happy.
Right.
I mean, that's what I want to see as a race fan. I want to see controversy. I want to see, you know, excitement. When you watch 500 laps at Martinsville, it's pretty easy to get strung out. If everybody's racing each other, quote unquote, you know, with white gloves, you know, trying to save their stuff, it creates very boring moments in a race where if you don't have the time to run up through there and get it done, that creates excitement and creates mistakes, and mistakes then translate into good racing.
Well, we're going to talk lots tonight about 2019. Let's have a look back at it. Also got phone lines ready to go, and we urge you tonight to give us a call. I'm going to give you a couple of phone numbers, okay? Because we do have more than one line coming into the Racetime Radio studio. I'm going to give you the first number, 519-371-7588. That is one phone line that you can give us a call on tonight. Again, 519-371-7588. And the second line is 519-371-3462. I'll give it to you again, 519-371-3462. So those are two different phone lines, so you're going to be able to jump on the program tonight. What I want to do tonight is hear from you. Let's have a look back at 2019 from a race fan perspective, or team perspective, if you will. We hear from the champions. We hear from the winners. We do that every Sunday night on Racetime Radio, and I usually do a great job loading it up with some of the best from across Canada and the U.S. And tonight, well, we're going to hear from Todd Gilliland. He won his first truck race. I've got some clips with Todd that we're going to play. But I thought, you know what, tonight let's do something totally different, totally off the wall, and let's just open this up. I know Junior and I can talk for 2 hours, basically looking back at 2019 and some of the highlights, some of the big moments, if you will, of 2019. We're just getting into the banquet portions of everything. The APC banquet was last weekend. There's, you know, like a lot of the track banquets are all going to take place, and champions are crowned. But, you know, the sport is made up of more than just the winners and just the champions. There's a lot of young talent coming. There is a lot of stuff that we can discuss that I think everybody would be interested in. So tonight is all about open mic night, and let's look back at 2019 and get your impression on what you thought were the biggest moments of the season. What were some of those times that really got you going and made you a race fan? We'll also, in hour number two, talk about how to get into this sport. You know, this is the time of the year. If you're thinking about racing, maybe you've been sitting on the sidelines in that grandstand or part of a race team, and you don't know how to get in, you know, to be part of this sport, and you might want to race, and you don't know where to start. Well, hopefully tonight Junior and I can give you some idea on how to start. It is somewhat of a mystery, Junior, in this sport, on how to get in, and that's kind of a travesty with this sport.
It is, really. You know, information is kind of the name of the game. You know, playbooks, if you have a decent playbook in a sport like football or hockey, you know, and you've got a decent coaching scenario, you know, you learn. And they're, you know, once you join the team, they'll teach you.
Yes.
Joining racing does not give you a playbook.
It doesn't.
And no matter what, you know, everybody that you're racing against is really worried about sharing data with you, because that data is what built them to where they're at. So, you know, you hear of up and coming drivers saying that they leaned on, you know, a veteran in the sport,
yep,
to get better. And you know, it's really interesting. There's an interesting dynamic of guys know that, you know, it's beneficial to the sport if they help somebody along.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very picky and choosy of who they do that with.
Sure. You don't want to be side by side with that guy. You want to beat him.
Exactly. So, you know, the neat part with us is we're going to be an open book, and we're going to tell you exactly what we think of how we're going to get there. But that'll come up in hour number two.
Sure it will. Let's get to the hotline, if you will. We do have a caller up there, and we got to welcome in for the first time in a long time that we've actually had time to take callers, and we've got Kent from the East Coast. What's going on, my friend? I haven't heard from you in a long time. You good, doing good?
Well, I'm telling you, you just keep the show so full, the fans are just listening. They don't have a chance to call in and say yay or nay or good job or what the hell are you talking about?
Well, tonight is the night, brother. Quite a season, 2019. Any defining moments for you, Kent, my friend?
Too short.
Too short, yeah. Where did it go, right?
I don't know where the season went, but it just seemed like yesterday we were opening up at the Ron McGilvery 150, and now it's all over for another year.
It is. Pretty fast season. Rank it for us. Give us a score. 1 to 10. 1 being the worst, 10 being the best. What was 2019 to you?
Well, I would say there were certain races that would have to make it a 10. And the highlight, or one of the highlights, would definitely be the domination by King Racing at the IWK 250, because they just took that, and once they get out front, drove away with it like we did last year. But this year we passed Tech 2.
Double down, right? Yeah, it was amazing to watch Cassius Clark in that car. At that IWK 250. No way was anybody catching that card that day.
No, it was on rails, and some of the races that we've seen later here in the season, it looks like the young Austin will have a pretty good piece to start with next year on tour, because he ran very well in some of the races that he did. So,
yeah, that's huge. Big news coming out. Gary, the Ironman Elliott, leaves Ontario, now out there, and actually living out there.
Yes, I heard that last week. You almost had me rolling off my bed saying, what? When did that happen? But,
yeah.
But no, that's going to be pretty cool. Another, like I say, I tweeted Joe there last week that the Allegiance will still be with Ken, but a second team to cheer for is not bad. There's three spots on every podium.
There is. You're right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I know Gary is set up, living just outside Turo. I was talking to him again this week to see how he was making out. Him and Buttons, his dog, right? That dog has got to be, it goes everywhere. I'm surprised there isn't two seats in his car.
Yeah. Has any of that red paint got green yet?
I would imagine. I do believe the butcher shop is going to do some painting on that machine before Gary gets it. Of course, Gary Elliott has purchased the number 53 from Cole Butcher, one of the Pro Stock Tour cars that went to Victory Lane right at the end of the season in the 200. That car that won, Gary Elliott now owns. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, he'll have a piece that, like he was saying last week when you had him on, he won't have to complain about the piece now. He'll have to try to make sure that the driver is being able to push the piece as far as he can take it.
Absolutely, and that's going to be a really neat thing to see, really, because Gary on the late model side, and I know I mentioned it last week, but Gary Elliott, you know, he's had good looking equipment forever.
Always.
But you know, when he first got into late model, he had the best of the best, and he was running right up front with his son Gary, or with his son David. They both had great cars,
yeah,
and for the era that they were in. But in the last couple of years, he hasn't, and he hasn't had, you know, equal product to what is racing at the front of the pack. And you know, he had an equal car in the modifieds, and you could see that he ran very competitive in the modifieds. But it will be very interesting, and I think that there's going to be a learning curve there. Just jumping from the perimeter style car. Or the older straight rail style car that he has been running, to now jumping into an up-to-date, fully up-to-date butcher machine from distance. There's a lot of geometry changes, and really it kind of screws with your head because sometimes we're in the old days, you would have went left, you're going to go right with these new cars, and it definitely throws a wrench into things. But that being said, he's been racing a long time, and he's had to go left and right multiple times.
Yeah.
So he's going to pick it up really quick, and I'm excited for him, man. It's going to be really cool to see, it's definitely going to be a massive addition to the Parts for Trucks Tour, and he's going to represent and be an ambassador for the sport just as he was here out there.
Yeah, and
he, like, when he came here to appear in the RWK, like, I can imagine, and just like talking to him when on track, it's so hard when you're jumping from one series to another with different equipment because they use different stuff than what we did, and you have to learn that curve and how the car handles and everything else. And then, well, yes, he's raced on two or three of the tracks, but I think there's seven. Is there seven tracks at the Pro Stock Tour?
I believe
five tracks.
Five tracks, yep.
Yeah, because they don't go to one there in New Brunswick no more. So.
Right.
But, yeah, no, so like he's got that learning curve, and like I say, I think now that he's on equal playing field, but you look at the Pro Stock field, we have 25 cars, or 27 cars, and 15 to 20 of those can be your winner on any night.
Yeah.
Like, you look at some of the cars that have upgraded the last few years, like the one that I was impressed with this year, and he turned there got a win, was Sean Pierce.
Yes,
like
yeah.
He was always, you could always count him on him being in the middle of the pack, but this year there was a couple races that he was fighting for a podium, and due to circumstances, he might not have got it, but that's the way racing goes, I guess.
Yeah, ended up getting his first heat win in I don't know how long.
Yes, I was there that night for the heat win, yeah.
Yeah, and good news. Got to ask you, Kent, you're a guy that is out on that east coast of Canada watching racing at various tracks. Let's talk about support divisions. What do you think the health of the support divisions is in the Maritimes? Are you happy with it, or can you see room for growth?
Divisions?
Yes.
Well, like if you're talking like, so you're talking Legends, you're talking the Honda four-cylinder class.
Yeah, Sportsman.
You guys probably have your ear to the ground and as well as the rest of us, where we've seen the launch of the new Hot Rod series for the, that I suspect, maybe not this year, but I would suspect that would become a full traveling partner with the Pro Stock Tour.
Wait, what are you talking about here? There's a Hot Rod division that's launching on the East Coast?
Yeah, Vintage. A Vintage series.
Come on, really?
Yep.
Yes.
That is cool.
You didn't know that, Joe?
I didn't know that. You're teaching me something.
Check
that's cool.
Out,
that's really cool.
HOAC Caribou, which is the heart of a champion. Those guys are with that, brung back the, is it the Terry Clattenburg car?
Yeah.
Okay,
99,
yep.
And
yep.
Then this year they brung back the 124 open wheel modified.
Yeah, okay. The Pinto. It was
those
a Pinto.
Those guys
yep.
are the ones, I think, that have spearheaded this. And I think there's, from what they tell us, we don't have no concrete numbers yet, or teams, or who's in the team.
Right.
But I believe that they're looking for at least a half dozen cars for next year.
I urge them to photocopy the Hot Rod rule book that they have in Ontario.
Yeah.
That's if I could give one piece of advice to a new series that's going to fire up somewhere, that Hot Rod series in Ontario has been explosive on the growth side.
Yeah.
And such a cool division.
Well,
I mean,
seeing pictures of the cars from the Ontario Hot Rod series.
Yep.
And perspective pictures of possible cars from HOC, which they have been putting out or sharing. The cars look the same. Now, like you say, that doesn't necessarily mean that the rules package is going to be the same.
Right.
But I believe in Canada, as well as we were in the Pro Stock Tour with the local tracks, that have their own pro stock class, which I believe the new class has started up at their home track base for Oyster Bed.
Right.
Their pro stock class, I believe, is pretty near matching what the tour is, because we've seen a couple of those guys pick certain races, and we know that some of the pro stock island drivers race the home track series at Oyster Bed. So that's where I like to see the stuff. I think anywhere's in the Maritimes, if you're in a sportsman division, if you can go from a home track series to a touring series with very minimal cost, except for the travel that's extra.
Right.
That's the best thing for the sport, because you're going to get some of those guys that are going to say, you know, I'd like to race on that track of Riverside, but if I got to go buy $1,000 worth of shocks and springs and this and that.
Right.
And yes, for different tracks, going for a track, something like Halifax to a track like Riverside, the High Banks, you're going to need some spring difference to make yourself to be competitive on those tracks.
Right.
But the general equipment should be as close as to the same as possible. And that's what's going to grow your supporting series.
Well, for all accounts, I got to say, 2020 looks pretty darn exciting out there on Canada's East Coast with the announcements that we've seen come forward and from what we've seen in 2019. So
yeah, I think what you got to do, Joe, is you got to get in the hook to those guys with HOAC, and as some of these cars are starting now, I seen a car today on Dylan Gosby's Facebook page.
Okay.
But it was an old Impala. I believe it was an Impala. I think it was Impala.
Right.
But it had windows in it, and I told him to get the windows out of that thing and get it ready for the track. But I think you might see, and then if you got to with that Hot Rod series, we know that there's some drivers in the Pro Stock series that don't mind doing double duty.
Right.
So if it was a full mating series, you might see some of these guys bring a Pro Stock, and then instead of jumping into a sportsman as they would, or a legend for a double duty as before,
right,
they would now also have a Hot Rod Series car.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. There's so many second and third generation drivers that are in the series. It'd be kind of cool to see them go retro and pull one out like their dad used to have, or their grandfather used to have, or whatever, and have it on the track in 2020. That'd be cool.
And also run some of the vintage paint schemes. That vintage paint scheme that Donald ran on his regular Pro Stock Tour disc car this year.
That was cool.
That was sharp.
Yeah, it
especially
was.
Especially under the lights.
It screwed me up calling him the 88 like John was. But, nevertheless, that the paint job, I agree, was real cool. Kent, this has been great catching up with you, buddy.
All right, boys, dig up some of those photos, and those guys that are out there listening in that Hot Rod Series, everybody would like to see those builds come along as they start getting ready going into the 2020 season.
Ah, lots to look forward to. That is Kent on the east coast of Canada. Always appreciate his call, Junior, always.
Absolutely. Longtime listener at RTR, and just a great cat. And, you know, that's a really cool deal. I had no idea that there was a Hot Rod Series being formed on the East Coast.
Yes.
I had
yes.
no idea at all.
Seen exhibition laps a few times while I was out there.
Very cool.
And it was I want to say it was a Pinto, but it looked like a jacked up Pinto.
Yeah.
It looked like a modified, open wheel.
Yep.
Beautiful car, sounded awesome. That deep sound, right, coming out of the headers.
Ground pounder.
Incredible. It's going to be a neat class out there, and we will dive into that, get more on it. I'll tell you what, we're going to hit a break here, but I want to give you the phone numbers again, because tonight is open mic night. Fans, we want to hear from you. What was your favorite part of 2019? And I say, fans, You don't have to be just a listener to Racetime Radio.
No, if you've got if you've got something cool coming down the pipeline, you got, you know, sponsorship that you're working on for your race car. You've got, you know,
events coming up.
Yeah, if you're changing classes, you know, it's the easiest way. We don't know everything. No. Obviously, I didn't know there was a hot rod class coming to the East Coast. So,
right.
I mean, teach us something. Yep. Tell us what you got coming down the pipe. I know that there's a lot of people out there listening in their race shops right now.
Always.
Taking apart their cars.
Yep.
And doing a little bit of bench racing. Give us a call. We'll talk about your stuff. And the fans want to know about stuff that's coming down the pipe.
That's right. The switch didn't just get turned off and then it just gets turned back on in the spring.
Well, it did on you. You slept all day.
Today, yeah. Let me give you the numbers again. It's 519-371-7588, 371-7588 with a 519 ahead of it, or 519-371-3462 are the two open lines, and they're both open. Let's hear from you next here on Racetime Radio. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay there.
1, 2, 3, like a bird I sing, 'cause you've given me the most beautiful set of wings.
Hey, race fans, this is Joey McComb, number 50. Hold on to your lug nuts. More Race Time Radio, seatbelts not included.
Go and fly away.
From coast to coast, you're listening to Canada Talks.
Race Time Radio is brought to you by Atlantic Tiltrope, specialist in the transportation of industrial equipment across Canada and the U.S. Also by the Quality Inn Halifax Airport, the official stay of Racetime Radio in Nova Scotia.
Mad Dog Sports Radio is opinionated, passionate sports talk with a bite from the hijinks of the morning men.
I bet your parents do too. They go big bulk shopping.
Hey, so I got 50 jars of duck sauce.
We don't even eat duck sauce,
but I got a good deal.
To the insight of Adam Schein.
Bill Belichick is the best coach in the history of sports.
Not NFL.
Sports.
And the animated energy of the Mad Dog himself,
Mad Dog.
Christopher Russo.
It's the channel to talk about your favorite sports team. Mad Dog Sports Radio, channel 82, or anytime on the SiriusXM app.
Cheap Trick guitarist Rick Nielsen on Canada Talks.
The 17 albums of all different stuff, and we've never stopped touring. We never expected to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We never expected something for nothing. You know, we spent our own money making our records, too, you know, and we did it, and we listened to people.
Don't miss a second. Canada Talks, SiriusXM Channel 167, and on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on.
Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90.
If you're a Springsteen fan, you just found the promised land.
Hey,
hear rare interviews and performances.
Oh, USA.
Live concerts.
Is there anybody alive out there?
Celebrity guest DJs.
This is Rob Lowe.
Hey, baby, it's Little Steven here.
And more exclusives when listening to Bruce Springsteen's channel.
Welcome, Bruce Springsteen, to E Street Radio, your home away from home.
Great to be here.
E Street Radio, SiriusXM Channel 20.
Racetime Radio to go.
Streaming live or on demand.
Grab the free app
at racetimeradio.com.
Taking you all the way to the track and back.
And we are back with you live tonight from the Racetime Radio studio. I want to thank you all for tuning in on SiriusXM Channel 167, Canada Talks, here Sunday night from 9 to 11. And if you're tuned in on 98.9 XFM out in Antigonish, Nova Scotia through the week, good evening to you. Or maybe the Performance Motorsport Network.com that airs Racetime Radio, I believe, three or four times a week throughout the course of the week. or Gearhead Country Radio, or maybe you're listening on demand, and you can do that if you had missed any of the show and want to go back and have a listen to it. Absolutely no problem. Get to iTunes. Everybody loves going to iTunes and loading up. Get to iTunes, search Racetime Radio, and you'll find it. You'll find it right there, because as soon as the show's over, Susie Q loads it up to iTunes. And when you're there, hit like, hit subscribe, and you'll never miss Racetime Radio again. And we'd love to be, we'd love you to be part of it. Now, we're looking back at 2019, some of those huge moments that we experienced this year. And everybody will have a different experience. Everybody will have a different favorite part of 2019. Whether you're from Canada or the U.S., what was your favorite part of 2019, now that the season is winding down? I do want to say that with all things good, we always end up with some bad stuff that takes place too. And we did lose some predominant people of our sport here in Canada. And just another one the other day, our thoughts and prayers go out to our family at CTMP and Jim Martin's family. Jim Martin, longtime announcer at CTMP, has passed away. We definitely want to put our thoughts and prayers out to our CTMP family. This is devastating. Jim was a cornerstone at that speedway. If you were ever at CTMP, you heard Jim. And he would get you up to date and keep you up to date all day long on the public address system. He has passed away, and our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody there. We also, just weeks ago, lost Jared Dockstetter. You would hear him at Grand Bend Speedway, and notably at Delaware Speedway is where I met Jared Dockstetter. Dynamite guy, again, an announcer, and gone way too early in life. We lost John Harper in the Oscar Series Junior. Ran the weekend, I believe, at
Chukasa.
Was it at Chukasa?
Yep.
And then passed away just days after.
Yep. And yeah. He dominated the race in the modified race. Just had a spectacular race with J.R. Fitzpatrick and really the entire group there put on a whale of a show. J.R. was driving the 10 Kelly Balson car and just put on a whale of a show, but he ended up coming out victorious. And then, you know, we seen him a few, I guess a week later for the first APC race.
Right.
He was in the pit area, but not feeling the best. And then, of course, we all got the news and just a tough deal. And he was definitely sorely missed through the Oscar garage and really through the entire short track community here in Ontario, because he's been, you know, such a staple at all the races. But, you know, it's wild. I said this the other day. I was talking to a guy, you know, when you're involved in motorsports, you're involved and you cast such a large footprint of not necessarily friends, but acquaintances that turn into friends.
Right.
You know, it's over time you meet new people at new tracks that you go to, and you know, your network just continually gets bigger and bigger and bigger with, you know, basically every event that you go to. You meet new people, whether they're fans, whether they're sponsors, whether they're officials, whether they're drivers and crew members. You just continually meet and meet and meet. You know, the longer you're in the sport, the larger your net gets of close friends and acquaintances through the sport. Really, when you look at it, like the amount of people that you meet through the years, even if you get into the sport and you know nobody in the sport,
yeah,
within a year, you're going to have 100 people that you have got advice from, that you borrowed a part from, that you've met at the pit gate, you know, you've bought a burger behind and had a good conversation with. You're going to meet a ton of people. And that's, you know, that comes back to, this sport isn't necessarily, you know, a conventional sport. It's more of a lifestyle.
It is.
You know?
It is. It gets in your blood.
You have to pour everything into it, and it usually takes everything out of it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you come out knowing a whole pile of people, and you know, it's you hear it a lot in the sport of, you know, when you lose somebody that's, you know, a driver, or you lose somebody that's an incremental, you know, person within the sport, it sends shockwaves all the way through the sport.
Sure does.
And you realize, you know, it's how every person that's there is a stakeholder in the sport.
Every piece makes it all happen.
Exactly. And yep. And that's kind of the cool part about the industry. And really, you know, it really hits home when you lose somebody.
It does. It does.
That's when you realize the size and the power of the sport is when you get that unfortunate news. But definitely, you know, it's a part of the sport. you hear about loss through it.
And that is only some of the loss that we've all incurred in 2019. We'll never forget. I can guarantee you that. And you never know when we're going to join our friends now on the other side. So you got to enjoy each and every day that you're here. Nobody can attest to that like I can. A year ago yesterday, on the 26th of October, I finished my final cancer treatment.
Yep.
And look at this, a year later, and here I sit. When, you know, initially the doctors told me I'd be lucky to see 2019.
Well, kicked that one.
Guess what? I'm getting ready to see 2020 now.
Yeah, that's right.
So, it's just kind of cool. But you do never know. So you got to enjoy each and every day. And each and every race is something different. And it's cool to hear the stories on how people have met. I know when you and I went down to the U.S., we go to New Smyrna Speedway for the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing every year for like 20 years.
Yep.
There was a guy by the name of Ed.
Yep.
And we met Ed years. I'm talking 25 years ago now.
Yep.
We met Ed, and he was from the state of Michigan. And he put his hand up, and he says, I'm from Michigan right here around the thumb.
Yep.
He was from near Lansing, Michigan.
Yep.
And we would see Ed at New Smyrna at that time of the year every year.
Yep.
Another one was Charlie Speaks. He was from Georgia. And it was funny because the people that sat, we would normally try and sit in the same spot in the grandstand throughout the course of Speed Weeks. There were so many people that were familiar in that area year after year that were from all over North America.
Yep.
And it was so funny because when we got to New Smyrna, we were all just one big happy family. All of us there for the same reason. We were excited to see what was going to come on the track that night. For what we were going to see. And I can tell you, some nights, there'd be grumbling. The car count isn't where it used to be 10 years ago. But I'll tell you what, nobody left that facility disappointed. And everybody went back to that facility again the next year. And we're always happy to do it. And that's the cool part. That's the part of this sport. That new Smyrna model works at every single short track across Canada and the U.S. You're a short track fan. You know what I mean? Who have you met at a racetrack that you never expected to meet, you never expected, and now you're friends, and now you look forward to not only going back to that race, but getting together with those same people next year when you go back to that race. Kind of cool stuff. Big races. Let's touch on some of those huge, iconic races that we've seen here in Canada over this year. Of course, the Parts for Trucks Tour. We did a lot of live broadcasting from Canada's East Coast. But we also did some APC races, Junior. The first APC race out of the gate from Sunset Speedway this year, it was the AC Delco 100. That was one that was a highlight for me right off the beginning of the year. We got a chance to actually call an APC race. And, man, what a weekend that was. Were you at that race? No.
You were at a
Pinty's race, weren't you?
I was at the – oh, no, I was supposed to be there. And Dion and Brandon Verhoeven, they ended up tearing up the car test day. So I was at CTMP for the opening weekend of the Pinty series. But we were supposed to drive over for it. But, you know, on Friday night, they ended up having some difficulty in testing and nosed it into the wall, so we didn't end up racing. So I ended up listening to that show, you know, from the hotel room and, you know, following along for the first APC race. But that was a great event. That
yeah,
was
it
Jordan
sure was.
Sims and the 47 ended up going to Victory Lane for the first time, and that was just a great one. I put together a list.
Did you?
I put together two lists, really. You can't just put together one. You got to put together one that's selfish.
Yeah.
You know, you got to put together a selfish list as somebody that's involved in the sport, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then you also got to look at it from an industry perspective. And if I was a fan and not invested or not working on a team or not being a part of it through RTR or, you know, as a fan, what was the cool moments?
Right.
You know, separating the fact that you didn't necessarily benefit from it, but you were excited by it.
Right.
So
right, right.
Really, you know, that was a great moment for Jordan Sims and those guys. And obviously, you know, RTR broadcasting it, it was cool and there was a lot of hype behind it. And getting out of the gate. You know, there was a lot of excitement. Even at the banquet, there was clips played from that race when those guys were called up on stage and you know, intertwined into the video.
Oh, that's
for
cool.
Each guy.
Yeah, cool.
You know, looking back on, you know, personally, obviously, you want to look at the championship that we won with Ranger. That was cool.
Yeah, what did you do through the season? You spotted a ton, and that's what people would have to know before they hear your list.
Yeah, yeah.
What
so,
all
so
you did.
It's actually part of my list is I got a chance to – I spotted for 34 feature events this year.
34 races.
With nine drivers,
wow.
Nine different drivers.
Yeah.
Six different provinces. And I had a blast working with every one of them. And we had good results, we had great results, and we had terrible results.
Yeah.
But had arguably one of the most fun summers in racing for me. Just simply, there was a tremendous amount of racing and travel and excitement. But you know, got a chance to work just cover off a couple of them. Ranger, obviously, the full time in the Pinty series with DJK. And Andrew Grizel worked with him a handful of times and as well, Junior Farley, with the 72 car,
yep.
Did a little bit with Trayton Lapsevich, David Gallinger for the final night at Flamborough. You know, I got a chance to spot for Gus Dean in the truck series, at CTMP.
That's right.
Which was a lot of fun. And then Albert Francis, we qualified fourth for the Canadian Short Track Nationals. Ended rough.
Yeah.
You know, back during the fence and had a terrible outing and blew up the motor for the outlaw car. But and then as well, my buddy Rick Verburn, you know, worked with him a handful of times. And I, of course, worked with him the whole time as he works on Andrew Ranger's crew. But it was just a blast. I worked with a lot of great drivers and you know, J.R. Fitzpatrick. I spotted for him for a win over at Flamborough. And just a ton of fun throughout the year. But I think the coolest thing that, you know, I got to witness throughout the year was the race between Ranger and LaCroix.
Yeah.
I think our team, the 27 team, I put out a Facebook post after, you know, kind of congratulating the both of them on a great season.
Right.
No matter how it ended up. But the fire and determination between the two was something that was, you know, you couldn't have scripted it.
No. And for it to stay in control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both your team stayed in control. So did the other guys.
Exactly.
Because it could have got out of hand real fast.
Numerous
and got
times.
Real, real goofy.
Numerous times. And,
yeah.
And you know, as soon as the 27 car unloaded, everybody looked over at the 74 camp. And as soon as the 74 camp unloaded, they looked over at the 27 camp.
Right.
And it was like that from the time that they hit the racetrack for the first lap of practice to the time that they dropped the checkered flag, you know, at every event. It was a constant, you know, battle between the two. And obviously, they weren't the fastest two guys at every single race. It's
no.
Not like that.
No.
But they unloaded knowing that they were racing each other. And there was a stretch in there where we would trade 2 points, 3 point leads.
Yep.
You know, all the way up until we got to the West Coast swing at the first race at Wyatt Group. And Ranger was able to open up an 18 point gap, you know, on the West Coast swing. But they were within like 2 points, 3 points of each other from the drop of the green flag in race number one all the way to race number five. Then Ranger opened up an 18-point gap and gave it all away in three races.
Wow.
And you know,
a little bit at a time, too, right? Because you guys were going,
exactly.
Oh, we can't give up any more points. We're okay.
Yep.
We'll just just stay here, and then we'll get them later.
Exactly.
Don't give up, and boom, another handful of points would go on that race.
Exactly. And, you know, looking back on the year, it was so exciting to be a part of because – you know, it was a race within a race. Obviously, the 27 camp would just go out there and do what they do. And the focus was on winning the race. And really, the focus wasn't on the 74, but it was always a secondary focus of where is the 74 running, you know? I can't count the amount of times where we would come off the track in practice. It could be the second or third run. And Ranger wasn't necessarily caring about where we were on the speed chart. It was, where's the 74? And, you know, it's because the battle was so intense all the way through the year. And they kept each other on their game, which was really neat to see. Obviously, at the end of the year, the entire Pinty series didn't want to see what happened to Kevin Lacroix happen.
No.
You know, it was a rough deal. Him and Alex Labbe got into it. The 74 went down, hit the wall, and never crossed the start-finish line.
Just stopped feet away.
Heartbreak. And went into the final event with an 8 or an 11-point cushion. If they went into that race with a 3-point cushion, if Lacroix would have just given up the position to the 36 car.
Right.
Or held on to the position with the 36 car and didn't wreck.
Right. Either or, right?
Either of those scenarios.
And the 36 didn't figure into the points end of it.
He was a non-issue. But if that didn't happen, rolling into Jucasa, that would have been epic. And really, it was looking like it was going to be like that all the way to 20 feet before the start-finish line at Loudoun, New Hampshire. It was such an incredible thing to watch. And there was times where Ranger got heated with 74, and there was times where the 74 got heated with Ranger and or with other competitors, and there was other dices in there. On the personal standpoint of the coolest moments, that the entire battle was king for me. As a fan, though,
right?
As a fan, the coolest moment of the year was the torrential downpour, 10 laps to go in race number one at Wyatt Group Speedway.
Okay.
Torrential downpour.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
they cleared the grandstands.
Biblical.
It was biblical. There was the infield of Wyatt Group Speedway. The TV coverage, Joel, those guys do a great job. They can't do it justice for how waterlogged that facility was.
Right.
I mean, the numbers that were tossed around, they got 12 inches of rain or 11 inches of rain in the span of like 26 minutes.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was biblical. And it looked bad coming. You could see it coming from a mile away. Of course, you're in the prairies. We're in the highest point of it.
Yeah.
Up in the spotter stand. The cold gets me. The coolest thing was there was a fan in the grandstand that owned a hydro excavation company, and it was Devil's Hydro Excavation,
right,
out of Saskatoon, and I believe it was 11 trucks that he owned.
Yeah.
It rained for 26 minutes. The entire infield was flooded. I mean, there were stacks of tires floating.
Right.
Not just one tire. Like, I mean,
there was a lot of water.
It was like...
I remember seeing the video.
It was up past the rocker panels of a 2019 Dodge pickup truck in the infield.
Wow.
Like, I mean, the whole floor of the truck was flooded.
I figured that was it for that night.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Everybody did. And they said, we will announce that, you know, what we're going to do here in the next 20 minutes, half hour. Then they said, we're going to announce what we're going to do in the next hour. And the fans started to leave a little bit. And lo and behold, they just went out to their parking lot, out to their car.
Right.
And this hydro excavation company, it was like a convoy rolling down the back straightaway. And one after another, these hydro excavation trucks rolled in. They're not cheap to operate.
Oh, God, no.
And they're not meant to suck water. Like, they are, but they're not, right?
Right,
they're a digging truck. And they just started sucking the infield out. And it was a fan that owned the company and said, you know what? It's clear now. We're not going to get any more rain. I want to see racing tonight. I don't care what it cost me. Called his dispatch, ordered all of his employees that could make it come. And they all came to the racetrack, bailed the track out, and we took the green at like 9:30 at night.
Wow.
And, I mean, the moment that the cars fired up for race number two was one of the coolest fan moments that I've ever seen at the racetrack. Because not only did all the fans come back from the parking lot.
Right.
They were all drinking for 3 hours. They were all having the best time of their life.
Right.
And nobody there on the facility thought that they were going to go racing.
Right.
Because there was literally a lake in the infield. And, you know, when the cars hit the fire, you know, they all fired up and the crowd went ballistic. It was a sound like, you know, I would equate the excitement of that crowd to the World Junior game, the semifinal that I was at in Buffalo.
No way.
Yeah, like
no
it was way. That excited. It was rumbling, you know. It was, you could hear them over top of the cars.
That, hey, we're going to get this
We're going to get this
in.
Going. And the drivers echoed that. They put on a whale of a race.
No, that's good.
And, you know, looking back on it, though, that was one of the coolest moments I've ever seen in a racetrack.
See, and that's how it all happens, right? It's not just the facility is doing everything they can. The series is doing all they can. The drivers, the teams, the everybody. And then Mother Nature comes along and goes, Boosh, you're stopping. And somebody out of the grandstand goes, hey, hold on a minute here. We're going to watch this. Here's what we're going to do. And that is a cool story. That's huge.
It was, you know, you couldn't have called an excavation company, a hydro excavation company, and got them to come to the racetrack.
No.
At that time of night, there was no possible way.
Yeah.
There had to be so many cards face up in that deck in order for that to happen that way.
Yeah.
You know, for us to even, you know, ponder going racing. And, you know, when it all took place and happened, you know, we were loading the cars. It was, I think it was midnight, you know, 11:45 when we were loading the cars in the hauler. And the buzz, everybody's like, I can't believe we got this in.
We got it in.
Like, I can't. Nobody could fathom it. We only lost 10 laps of racing that night.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it. They got the super late model race in before us. They got the, they had trucks, I believe, like the pro trucks that they had.
Yeah.
And then they raced the first 125 all the way to you know, lap 115. That's when the rain came. And, you know, then we got the full second half of the race in. Just a really cool deal for the fans, anybody that was a part of it.
Did you watch that truck race?
Which truck race? Which
the one that was at Auto Clear?
Yeah.
Did
you? Yeah. Well,
can you remember hearing the 99 Fisher? Was he still racing?
I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, well, I just thought I'd
Chantel Kalika's car or truck, the 49, was out there with somebody else driving.
Yeah.
I can't remember the 99. It was, you know, my mind was not on the truck race.
It was on the Pindies race. I want to hold you right there, Junior. What we got to do is we got to throw it back to Toronto and Scotty. He's going to get us up to date on some news and some highlights that you may have missed over hour number one on Sirius XM Channel 167. And then Junior and I are going to be back for hour number two. We're going to come up and we'll continue to talk 2019. Hopefully hear from you here on the channel. We'll also talk about some tips on how to get involved with racing. If you may be, you know, sitting in the grandstand thinking you might want to get and be part of this sport, we'll give you some tips on the other side in hour number two. Stay with us. We will be back. Only going to take 90 seconds. Won't hurt a bit. We'll be right back. Stay with us here on Racetime Radio.
You're listening to Canada Talks on Sirius XM, Channel 167.
Racetime Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn, Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Racetime Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on.
Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90. We're back with our number two of Race Time Radio. With the two Joes here on Race Time Radio on SiriusXM 167, where Canada talks.
And just like that, our number two begins. Both Junior and I got our heads cleared, throats cleared out. Should be good to go for another hour here tonight. We're taking a look back at some of our highlights of 2019. I would love to hear your highlights of 2019. Give us a call tonight. I'll give you the phone number. It's 519-371-7588 or 519-371-3462 or 888-572-2384. You can get all those on our Twitter. I can well imagine Susie Q has tweeted those phone numbers out. What was your highlight of 2019? Was it the Canadian Short Track Nationals at UCASA? Was it maybe the IWK 250? I know that was my highlight of 2019. It was an unbelievable race. Once again, it has been the last 9 years we've been broadcasting that race. Always a highlight for me. The CAT 250 at Scotia Speed World. That's always another huge one. At the Atlantic Oliver Tire 200, where we watched Dylan Blankhorn win the championship. That was super. Delaware Speedway. How about at the APC Series? They crowned their champion, Matt Perdigo. He claimed that at Delaware Speedway, along with J.R. Fitzpatrick winning that night. A lot of fenders flew, a lot of fans, a lot of hurt feelings at the end. There was a lot of spectacular races in 2019, and we didn't get to every one of them. I can guarantee you, we only got to some of them. To be interesting, maybe you got to one that blew your socks off, and you can't wait to get to in 2020. My number one, Junior, was the IWK 250. Cassius Clark, he went out there and put a whooping on everybody. It was redemption for him. It was something that I'll tell you, victory was awful sweet that night for the number 13 crew. I can also tell you that a lot of the teams in the Parts for Trucks tour were embarrassed. Yeah. We're embarrassed, and you don't embarrass those guys easily, but they were. They were embarrassed, and they swore that that would never happen again. So it just speaks to the competition in the Parts for Trucks tour. It's going to be cool moving forward.
Absolutely. I put I grouped my top three races.
Okay.
That
I know these are all on the same keel.
These are the top three events that stand out in my mind for the year, and they were races that I was at. You know, I can't equate races that I wasn't at.
Right.
Obviously, the IWK would be on there if I was there. You know.
Right.
Because it's a crown jewel event. But top three races that I was at this year in Canada are the. It's a surprising one, first one.
Yep.
And it's a doubleheader, but the Sobel Speedway doubleheader for the APC weekend.
Ah, that was a good one, too.
It was arguably one of the coolest late model races that I've been to in a long time here in Canada.
Yeah, it was.
You know, 100 laps on Friday night, 100 laps on Sunday night, packed, full crowd.
Couldn't get another person in Sunday. Nope.
Just a marvelous crowd on Friday night. And, you know, the entire buzz that weekend, the amount of campers that were there at Sobel Speedway, the excitement level, the amount of buzz on Friday night after the race, you know, heading into Saturday. There were guys working on their cars in parking lots, you know, all across.
Yeah.
They were also in the pit area at Sobel. you know, wrenching on their cars and fixing damage from the night before. It was a great race both nights. But that event, you know, you got to look at it as a weekend event. And that was one of the coolest events for me.
Got so lucky with the weather that weekend.
So lucky.
You what. Paul Grizzell, the smile he had was a mile wide.
Yeah, 100%.
We raced Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. And you could not ask for better weather. We couldn't have bought better weather.
No.
It was absolutely perfect.
Exactly. Yep. No,
and I can't remember another long weekend in August where the weather was spectacular like that for 3 days in a row.
Yeah, it wasn't too hot. Wasn't
nope.
too cold.
No.
It wasn't there was no precipitation. It was just a Chamber of Commerce style weather.
And fans got their money's worth
with
the racing that was on track.
Oh man, it was wild.
Front to back.
Yep. There was you know, there was thrills and spills. There was, you know, exciting moments. There was a close finish on Sunday night. There was just everything you could ask for a weekend. And that was definitely, you know, part of my top three. Moving on, the
yes.
next weekend.
Yep.
It's not a surprise because everybody talks about it. But if you haven't been there, it would be a surprise. The Three Rivers, the Grand Prix of Trois-Rivières, or GP3R. However you want to call it.
Yep.
That event never ceases to amaze me at the amount of people that are there to watch good racing. There's lots of, you know, feeder divisions that race there.
Right.
Everybody's there to see the Pinty Series. There are more Andrew Ranger shirts walking around that place. There are more Alex Tagliani shirts walking around that place. And there are more Kevin LaCroix shirts. And there are more Marc-Antoine Cameron.
LP
Dumoulin. And JF Dumoulin. When you walk in there, you would swear you're at a cup race.
It's got that atmosphere, doesn't it?
Oh, they've got, you know, I forget the number. They said it in the driver's meeting. I want to say 32 or 33 suites. You know, that are for the corporate sponsors.
Yep.
You know, there's catering trucks, there's just excitement level through the roof. There's nice cars everywhere.
Yep.
I mean, there's pretty girls everywhere. There's everything you could want in a big event. If you've never been to the GP3R, book your tickets next year and go see it, because it is something to take in, and it's not just the race. I always say that a key to a successful event is a festival atmosphere.
Yeah.
You can't get any more festival than GP3R. They shut down the entire town. I don't know the population of Three Rivers in Quebec. It's got to be a 75,000 person city.
Yep.
If not more.
If not more,
You know. Sorry for not knowing. But they shut down the entire downtown corridor. They have a block party on Friday night. There's live music everywhere. There's good food everywhere. There's cold beer everywhere. Just a great atmosphere to go be a part of. And then you go to the track on Saturday, and you go to the track on Sunday, and they do that same thing every single night. Just the entire team gets up for it. For every one of those teams, and they usually put on some wild racing, and this year didn't you know cease to amaze anybody. LP Dumoulin and Tagliani, of course, were 1-2 at the end, and JF Dumoulin coming home third.
Yeah,
a huge weekend. You know, obviously Ranger LaCroix had troubles, and as well Marc-Antoine had troubles, and it was just a wild event. And you know, it's the only other big professional race that has a TV screen at it, other than the truck weekend and the Honda Indy Toronto.
Right.
Just a really cool event. So
I can attest to that.
Yeah.
In 2010, Susie and I went, and we did every NASCAR Canadian Tire Series race coast to coast. And GP3R was one of those races that we did in 2010. I can imagine it has grown. Dominic does a dynamite job with that race. The year we were there, I want to say there was between 60 and 70,000 people on the property to see that race.
Yeah.
And the wildest part was we were there all weekend. We flew in and out of Montreal instead of driving at all because I had been, I drove enough that year. I said, we're going to fly to that one, Sue. We'll rent a car in Montreal. It can't be that far away from the Montreal airport. It was still an hour and a half away.
Yep.
And we did drive it. We had a flight scheduled to come back to Toronto on Sunday. I think our flight left at 5 o'clock.
Yep.
The race started at 4 on Sunday.
Exactly.
I missed the actual race itself. They were taking the green flag
as you were leaving.
When Sue and I were leaving the property because we had to get back to the airport so we didn't miss our flight.
Logistics.
So I missed the actual race, but I feel as though that weekend I didn't miss a lot.
No.
Even though I missed the race,
didn't
feel as though I missed a lot. I was there for the event. I got the feel of it, and I agree wholeheartedly with you. The Quebec race fans, I knew at that point, the Quebec race fans were unbelievable.
Yep.
They did an amazing job with the facility. NASCAR did a great job. The fans showed up, and it was the first time everybody kept saying to me, try the Montreal smoked meat on that vendor right over there.
Yep.
And sure enough, Sue and I went over, and we got sandwiches. And
crazy.
The Montreal smoked meat was everything that they said it was.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
Just a really neat event overall. And I urge everybody, they're making some changes to the event for next year. You know, there's always been a green flag pit stop needed between a certain lap and a certain lap. Just for fuel only.
Yeah.
By the sounds of it, next year they're making it closer to like a CTMP where you're going to need to take tires, where it's going to be a little bit of a longer race than what we've had in the past. And that's, you know, I don't know all the specifics behind it, but they're making some changes to the format of it, which will only add to the event. And that's definitely going to be exciting. And, you know, they make it bigger every single year. They're adding purse money. They're adding payout. And you're going to see even a bigger car count, I believe, for next year. So there's definitely some exciting things coming down the pipe for that event.
That's cool.
But and then, obviously, to wrap it up, the Canadian Short Track Nationals, just being there. I spent the entire weekend in the spotter stand. That's my happy place.
Shame it rained this year.
Yeah.
It's a real shame that that happened.
It was for sure. The rain, you know, definitely stepped on us a little bit. You know, I got a chance to spot for, Albert Francis. We had an Outlaw Super Late there. We had a Pro Late, and then we also had Rick Verburn with his Super Stock. Just a really cool event, had a lot of fun. You know, there was a lot of iron there when you walk around the pit area and you see, you know, 60 of the most beautiful Pro Late models you've ever seen stacked up. It was pretty cool. So, you know, it was that was a great event for me.
I emailed Alex Nagy from Jukasa just, I want to say, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. I'm working on the Sauble Speedway schedule for 2020. And trying to get things sorted out so we know what we're going to see at Sauble Speedway next year. I wanted to email Alex and find out what the Canadian Short Track National weekend date was. I did notice that CTMP has moved the truck race for 2020, and it is now going to happen on the Labor Day weekend in 2020. So I kind of thought, well, that's probably going to affect the Canadian Short Track National weekend, because that was on Labor Day this weekend. So I thought, well, better email Alex. Got to find out. We want to try and do what we can to support the Canadian Short Track National from a Sauble Speedway side and not schedule something big that weekend. So I asked him what the date was. And to this point, there is no date lined up for the Canadian Short Track National 2020. I don't know when the date will come out. Alex never gave me any kind of indication on when the date will come out or if a date will come out. Don't know.
Yep.
Don't know. So I guess time will tell on that.
Yep.
I just surmise that it's not going to happen. Truck weekend, I think that would be suicide. The truck weekend in Canada is Canada's ultimate NASCAR weekend. And it's going to be on Labor Day 2020, and one that I know absolutely everybody's going to look forward to, as well as the Canadian Short Track Nationals for the weekend, whatever weekend it comes out on. I just think it'd be technically lunacy if you were to put them on the same weekend. That probably wouldn't work. But yeah, that's only my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, because I think a lot of the fan base carries over, right?
Oh yeah,
like, I mean, a tremendous amount of the fan base. It's definitely a big weekend at both. So it's interesting. I think here in Canada, there's also the 660 weekend.
Labor Day,
which holds back. Last year was on the same day as the Nationals.
It has been the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So that holds back a lot of the East Coast competitors, guys.
You know,
right?
we only seen Nicholas Nogle there this year for the Nationals.
Right.
I think he was the only guy from the East Coast that made the trip. Right?
He was. Yep.
And the year before that, the only guy was Kent Vincent. You know, definitely a difficult thing, because those are two crown jewel events. They both pay a tremendous amount of money, and if you've got the choice to tow 4 hours for $30,000 or tow 20 hours for, we've seen the Reeds as well, but are they East Coast or West Coast? Because they're from Alberta.
Yeah.
But you know, the Reeds were there as well.
They live
year.
In the West.
But
they exactly. race in the East.
Yeah. So, yeah. But they were there as well. But when you look at it, are you going to tow 5 hours to, or, you know, 3 or 5 hours to race for $30,000 to win? Or are you going to tow 20 hours for, you know, $75,000 to win?
And so, go up against the United States best
exactly.
in short track racing.
Yep.
With their rules, and their tech guy, and their race director. That's a lot to go up against, bud.
It is.
Yep. If you ask me, that's a lot to go up against.
Yeah, for sure.
But it would be kind of cool. I think it would be a good idea to move that race weekend onto a weekend that doesn't affect, you know, places and events like that East Coast big race, that 660 and the truck race, and pick a weekend after it or before it or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
But maybe it doesn't fit the U.S. guys. Maybe not. Maybe that's the reason why it was on the Labor Day weekend, because it fits
this year,
the U.S. guys that he had coming
in. Well, this year here, though, it walked on Winchester. There was you had the choice to go to Winchester, or you had the choice to go to the Nationals. So I don't know if that necessarily comes into play, because
wasn't the Winchester 400
weekend. No, was the CRA, you know, Jags weekend.
But that's a series race, right?
And super late model race, for both.
Invitational or series race?
I believe it's just a series race.
Right.
But still, there's a lot of guys that don't run for points, and they race, you know, in the
CSRA?
No, or the CRA series.
CSRA.
The CRA series.
Yeah.
For just their big ticket events. And then same with the Cars Tour and those guys. So, it'd
be pretty hard to make a weekend to please everybody, wouldn't it?
Well, it's impossible.
October? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you want to race in November?
Yeah.
The reason why a race like the Derby has so much success is nothing is up against it, right?
I guess.
The reason why the Tulsa Chili Bowl has so much success is because that's the only racing that's happening at that point. But, without putting a roof over it and heating the joint, you're not going to get up against that up here in Canada. But still, you attracted a lot of the money, and obviously the purse attracts a lot of people, and there's going to be a good car count regardless.
I believe, and I could be wrong at this, but I believe the forecast schedules this next Short Track Nationals to be the $500,000 payday.
It does.
Not the $300,000 it was this year. It's going to go $500,000 in 2020.
Which works out to $125,000 win. Yeah.
In 2021, it goes to $1 million.
Which is $250,000 to
win. Woo!
So, you know,
that's a lot of hockey pucks.
It is, for sure. And, the guys that have been here the past couple of years, when you look at Bubba, you look at a guy like Eddie McDonald. He came up here and he finished second, but then got disqualified for an infraction in the box.
The guy you were with,
Albert
that thing
Francis,
was rolling.
Yeah, those guys, you know, everybody that is, you know, here now or been here the last couple of years, J.R. Fitzpatrick and Matt Pertigo and all those guys, Brandon Watson, and the list goes on and on. They're getting ready for those big events, you know, for even bigger things. $125,000 is no joke, and it's going to attract some major technology. And, you know, same thing with $250,000. When you get to that point next year, not next summer, but the summer after, you're getting into some pretty prestigious territory, and you're going to start attracting some big names.
Hey, we still got lots more to come at you tonight. We're going to step out, take a quick break here on Race Time. We got more looking back at 2019 coming at you. We'll also hear from Todd Gilliland. He won his first truck race at Martinsville on the weekend. We got some clips with him. And we'll try and give you some tips on how to get into this sport if, by chance, you want to jump in for 2020. We got a little bit of framework. Of course, he'd be lying to you if we tried to tell you that we know all the answers, but we can definitely point you in the right direction, and we'll do that still to come here tonight on Race Time. Stay with us.
I bet y'all having a good time out there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ain't nobody like it, don't stop the party.
Hey, Rick Graham, and you're listening to Race Time Radio. Ain't nobody like it,
you're listening to Canada Talks on Sirius XM, Channel 167.
Race Time Radio is brought to you by the Quality Inn, Halifax Airport, the official stay of the Race Time Radio broadcast crew. Also by APX Racewear, the motorsports leader in custom crew apparel and fire suits. Also by the Wooden Door Bistro.
If you're a Springsteen fan, you just found the promised land. Hear rare interviews and performances. Live concerts.
Is there anybody alive out there?
Celebrity guest DJs.
This is Rob Lowe.
Hey, baby, it's Little Steven here.
And more exclusives when listening to Bruce Springsteen's channel.
Welcome, Bruce Springsteen, to E Street Radio, your home away from home.
Great to meet you.
E Street Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 20.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio, Channel 90, is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on. And
perfect! Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
Sirius XM NASCAR Radio,
Channel 90.
MAP TV, the only network dedicated to all things motorsports, is racing across Canada now. The only network destination of all things motorsports. MAP TV offers every type of motorsports racing. With grassroots racing events from across the country and around the world, MAP TV's programming schedule is truly second to none. MAP TV Canada. Contact your TV provider for availability now.
Mad Dog Sports Radio is opinionated, passionate sports talk with a bite from the hijinks of the morning men.
I bet your parents do too. They go big bulk shopping.
Hey, so I got 50 jars of duck sauce.
I don't even eat duck sauce,
but I got a good deal.
To the insight of Adam Schein.
Bill Belichick is the best coach in the history of sports.
Not NFL. Sports.
And the animated energy of the Mad Dog himself, Mad Dog. Christopher Russo.
This is the channel to talk about your favorite sports team. Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82, or anytime on the Sirius XM app.
Taking you all the way to the track and back. It's Race Time Radio.
And we are back with you live tonight, right here on Race Time Radio from the Race Time Radio studio. I'm Joe Chisholm, along with Joe Chisholm Jr. Junior having a look at his phone over the break, and lo and behold, you pop a video out. Looks like Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano not getting along.
Yeah, no, they didn't get along very well at all.
No.
They've been button heads for years. I mean, that's what happens when you run at the front all the time, and, you know, you're going to make enemies, and you know, that goes back a long ways. You think about it, I remember them fighting with the old COT cars, you know, they've always traded jabs back and forth in the media center. Of course, you look back into the Gen 7 and Joey Logano and Denny wrecking each other at California there and fighting at Bristol. And now they traded again.
Wow. I think it just came from that incident down the
Well, they raced each other hard all day.
Oh,
they raced each other hard all day.
And
they rooted each other a couple times.
Seeing the 11 crowd the 22 up into the fence.
Yeah.
Joey made pretty good contact with the fence cut a tire down and had to come down pit road, and that consequently cost him.
That happens.
Yeah, it does.
Happens big league auto racing.
You're... didn't really look like Denny tried to put him up there, but who knows? Who knows? Obviously, Joey thought he did.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they've never got along.
No. Well,
but, I mean, you need that. You need that.
Teammates at one point?
Oh, they were. Yeah. Absolutely.
Big-time teammates.
You know what? A lot of the times, teammates don't like each other. You know? It's,
You're getting more than I'm getting,
you're
right?
You're getting more than I'm getting. You're doing better than I am. I'm doing better than you are. Whatever.
The good car. I got the B car.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's a lot of frustration that happens with this whole team game. You know, I look back on it, and when you look at the Cup Series, and, you know, what I like about... you know, short track racing.
Yeah.
When you show up, and now you're seeing more of it now that I say this, but you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. When you look at the Cup Series, you've got literally just three teams fighting each other.
Yeah.
There are three manufacturers at the front.
Right.
Then there are 15 teams that are not associated or affiliated with anybody, and they're running at the back. Right.
Yeah.
They're at the back, but they're racing each other. So you've got a race within a race in the Cup Series.
Yeah.
Because you've got the race for 25th, and then you've got the race for the win. And, you know, the guy who's going to finish 25th is a good day is a guy like, you know, Corey LaJoy or Ryan Preece or, you know, any of those guys, Landon Castle or, you know, the guys that are 25th on back every week.
Yeah.
They're 25th on back every week. And the guys who are 25th forward, they're there every week as well. But really, when you look at it, you're afraid of pissing anybody off that's in your camp. So that means that really, if you're a Chevy guy and you're racing for Hendrick, you can't step on any of the RCR guys or the Ganassi guys, right? Chevrolet versus the rest of them.
Lots to think
about. If you're
a
Toyota guy, you can't piss off any of the Toyota guys. If you're a Ford guy, you can't piss off any of the Ford guys, unless you're Front Row Motorsports. You know, who is just they run Ford decals and minimal Ford support. You look at Stuart Haas, Penske, and you know, the Stuart Haas, Penske, and Roush are the big Ford guys, right? But if you're a Stuart Haas guy, you don't want to be wrecking a guy that's, you know, in you know, Stuart Haas or Penske's camp. It's funny that you see all these allegiances in the Cup Series because they all feed off of each other.
Right.
Right. So, and you're seeing that same type of thing in the Pinty Series. It's developed over, you know, the course of 10 years from the because there's so many multi-car teams, right? You've got DJ with two to four cars at the track. You've got Steckley with, you know, three or four cars at the track every weekend. You've got Dumoulin with three or four cars at the track every weekend. And those guys don't want to wreck each other to race. I wish that the entire series raced each other like Andrew Ranger and DJ Kennington race each other.
Yeah.
They don't care.
No, they don't. Yeah,
Wants to finish in front of Ranger, and Ranger wants to finish in front of DJ just as bad as DJ wants to finish in front of Ranger.
Yeah, they are together literally until the helmets go on.
Exactly, 100%.
And it's they like will they share don't notes. Know each other.
They will share notes. They will do anything. The amount of times that somebody bounced off the back bumper of our 27 car this year, I would say that the highest count goes to the 17 car.
Yeah.
And I would argue that the 27 probably hit the 17 the same amount of times. You know, like they race each other so hard and they're vicious with each other. Now they cut each other brakes on restarts and they let each other in, but then as soon as they're single file, they go at it and they race each other. They'll move each other out of the way, they crowd each other up and it's good hard racing. I wish that the Cup Series was like that because it's not.
I remember last year when you and I went to Jukasa, I went down to see the final, not this year, in 2018. I wasn't feeling very good. That was right when I had started all that chemo stuff.
And
I hung out in the truck. I had my scanner on, and I listened in on the 27 channel. I wanted to hear what you were spotting and, you know, had a couple of different drivers set up. But I happened to be listening on a restart to the 27. And the 17 car was on Andrew's inside.
Yep.
The green flag came out, and DJ drove it down in there a ton.
Yep.
27 was on the outside. And DJ washed up.
Yep.
And he used the 27 to get around turn two.
Absolutely.
And I'll never forget Andrew Ranger coming on.
Yeah.
And he was just flipping out,
yep,
saying, DJ just used me up.
Yep.
What is he thinking?
Yep.
And I remember you coming on saying, well, bud, he's trying to beat you.
Yep.
Now let's go get him. Let's,
yep,
go get him.
Yep.
Forget about what he did. Let's go get him. But I remember that. And, yep, and I've watched since then.
Yep.
And you're probably right. The 27 and the 17 race themselves harder,
yeah,
than I've ever seen two teammates race each other.
And I will say that about, it's not just DJ and Ranger. I'll say this about the Steckley camp as well. Anytime Tagliani is anywhere near Marc-Antoine Cameron,
yeah,
your eyes as a spotter need to be on that because you're thinking that's where the yellow is going to come from.
Oh, really?
Tagliani and Marc-Antoine don't give each other an inch on the racetrack, and they usually take 10 inches when there's only three there.
Right.
And
right.
And they arc off each other, and it's exciting, and you know, they're racing each other hard. Obviously very expensive for Scott Steckley.
Yeah.
But it's part of the game. They're all racing each other equally as hard. But you don't see that, you know, teammates. I've seen it today twice, where the 22 actually punted the 12, you know, after, you know, holding up his line for like three laps or five laps, whatever it was. And, you know, the 12, you know, ended up getting punted by the 22 and they weren't happy with each other. And then you've seen it with Boyer and the 41 of Suarez.
Yeah.
They did it. And then late race, the 2 car and the 12 car got together. But, I mean, you don't see that ever in the Cup Series. That's very, very rare,
right,
to see teammates stepping on each other's tails like that. But that's what creates good racing. And that's what I love about short track racing is there. If there's 40 cars in the pits, there's 40 cars out for themselves. If
right.
there's 20 cars in the pits, there's 20 cars out for themselves. That's it. They brought their friends with them to the racetrack. They're not looking to make friends on the racetrack.
No.
But now that I'm saying this,
yeah,
over the last 3 to 5 years, you're seeing these alliances form with the chassis manufacturers, which are completely different than the manufacturers or sponsors in the Cup Series or in the upper tiers of NASCAR. But they're still forming these little alliances, right? When you think of, you know, an APC race,
right,
you'll have 10 cars, call it, from McCall's.
Right.
And 8 of them work very closely together with each other,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The Billy Schwarzenbergs, the Matt Pertigos, the Jordan Sims, and the close McCall cars, you know, they all race each other like teammates. And you know, you're seeing more and more of that at the short track level, but I still love the fact that it's 40 guys paying 40 different bills and guys and girls, right?
Right, right.
But there's, you know, X amount of competitors and they're racing for themselves only.
Yeah.
And that is something that the upper tiers of racing is missing. It's so incestuous now. When you look at the Cup Series, you know, you look at, you know, the motor builders, right?
Right.
ECR supplies like 12 cars with motors.
Right.
And they're effectively teammates. If
yeah.
you're getting an ECR motor, you're likely getting support from the engineering. And
yeah, because the info out of your engine is going to go to those other guys that
exactly,
are ECR.
Exactly. And you know, then you look at it, and there's Chevrolet Engineering, and Chevrolet Engineering is sharing data with everybody. And you know, within the Chevrolet, you know,
camp.
Yep. Same thing with Toyota, same thing with Ford. And then you've got, you know, the Ford camp, which is they're all running Roush Yates Motors,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're all running Roush Yates Motors, so they're all effectively teammates. If they're not, you know, if they're not,
then they're not really running up there,
exactly.
Right,
and that's
When was the last time we've seen an independent race team having an independent chassis, an independent motor program, and running up at the front?
You can't anymore.
No. Well,
that's the problem is
you
that
can't.
They're all combining. They're all combining. And I hope that the Gen 7 car, You know, we're hearing all this new stuff about the next gen car, the Gen 7 car, whatever you want to call it now. But the new style chassis that Austin Dillon just tested at Richmond a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, seen photos of that.
You know, I hope that that can get to the point where there's a little bit less sharing in NASCAR.
Yeah.
I hope that it doesn't promote more sharing. Because if it does, it's going to continually...
Haves and have-nots.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, if there's an ability to separate the sharing... I think that would be a good direction because really when you look at a race where there's 40 people that don't care about each other,
right?
There's friends in racing, you know, there's people that you can drink beer with after the race.
Right.
I get that. There's always going to be that camaraderie or, you know, that general respect for one another where you can go out and have a good time. I don't want 40 people to hate each other when they're in the racetrack.
No.
That being said, I want to watch a race where, you know, the guy in second place, there's no hard feelings of putting the nose in there where he shouldn't.
Right.
You know? And, you know, that's the type of thing that, you know, I like to watch.
Well, Martin Truex did it today, right? On the way through. Yep. Martin Truex, he won the race today, did a hell of a job.
Yep.
Colpern. On top of the box, Cole, a good friend of Racetime Radio's, got to congratulate those guys.
For a guy who couldn't win a short track race for the longest time, going out and winning three in one season, you know, hats off to those guys.
Says a lot, right?
They're definitely turning a corner. You know, Martin Truex went a long time without winning a short track race, like a very long time. And now, you know, he's been fast all the time. You know, for the past,
Cole's got him trained now
for the past 4 or 5 years. And of course, Cole did come off of the short track, and so did Martin Truex.
Yeah.
You know, they speak the same language, but they do such a great job together.
You said something. It popped into my mind here, and I want to make sure that I cover it off. And that was earlier this week. Big announcement from the APC series. They have the 2020 rules package out to the teams, and exciting news: we're going to see some of those new bodies in the APC series 2020. That's cool.
Bold move.
Yeah.
For a sanctioning body. They're not first to the platter. They're first to the platter in Canada on that front. But when you look at the new body style, NASCAR approved it for next year for the late model stocks program that they have down there.
Yep.
Which was a bold move for NASCAR to do. And really that snowballed now into APC allowing that new body. Hopefully the Parts for Trucks Tour can follow that same realm. Looking at the two bodies and the things, not that I'm an aerodynamicist or anything by any stretch, but you know, you learn certain things that work and certain things that don't, and you hear certain things that work and certain things that don't. And from all the testimony and from all the research that I've done about the new body, there's a little bit higher downforce numbers in the front and back, but there's higher downforce numbers in the greenhouse area of the other car. You know, you're not giving up anything by going to the new body, but I don't feel that we race on any style track that it's going to matter in life or death, of the car.
Hey, I've seen guys in victory lane on a short track without
absolutely.
A front end.
100%.
Without a front end, Tim Ellis.
100%. Yep. Tim Ellis, you know, thinking back on it, I've seen tons of them.
Doors and a roof.
Yeah.
I mean, no front end left.
Yeah, and he went to victory lane.
And he's sitting in victory lane. Yep. Jim Mullenhaus was another one.
Yep. Barry Speedway, right?
Jimmy. He was teammates with Tom Walters, Jim.
Oh, Rogers.
Jim Rogers. There you go.
Yep.
Jimmy Rogers, another one.
Yep.
Missing the side of his car.
Yep.
Total side.
Yep.
In victory lane. Want to turn that car around, Jimmy, so we can get a photo of it and we can actually identify the car.
Yeah. But, you know, Aero, these guys are now looking for any incremental advantage that you can have, whatever.
Yeah.
Weight wise, you know, there was a lightweight body and there was a heavy body from the ABC style. You know, I think keeping the
is the integrity of that program still available?
Yes.
The ABC program?
Yes, 100%.
ARP and Five-star.
And five-star with that old-style body. Now, right. ARP, AR bodies don't have the new style yet, and they're coming out with it, I believe.
So is it approved? Well, if one manufacturer hasn't got it, well, then how can it be?
So it's not part of the ABC program,
right?
The new body style, as of yet. Now, they're going to have templates for them. And you know, kind of looking at the new body style, there's going to be a template program for them. But keeping Pandora in the box is a whole other thing with that new body. You know, there has to be just as stringent, you know, measurements taken on the new body as there was with the old. But you know, to me, the entire, and I sent out a tweet when I seen that NASCAR, you know, approved it, and there was all this talk about it. The conversation for bodies for me in pro late model, even into super late model racing, or late model stocks down south, pro stocks out east, the conversation of a body, just going back to what you said, you can win these races with a 2x4 strapped to the front of the car.
Sure.
You can win with a 4x8 sheet of plywood at the front of the car. If your car turns, you're going to be fine.
Maybe not at Jucasa.
No, maybe not at Jucasa.
Right. At Jucasa, you're going to need the body in place.
I agree. And you're going to have to take steps to make sure it gets through the air well. But the entire conversation, I do not want to see, you know, the big sheets of Lexan on the side
and the
big wings.
No.
And I don't want to see like a crazy style body come out and race against guys that all look the same. But that being said, these guys are going through a completely different way of spending now in the APC series, in the Pro Stock Tour, than you used to 10 to 15 years ago. You look at the All-Star Series and 80% of those cars, well, they all looked very similar.
Yep.
They all looked very similar.
Monte Carlo.
Right? There was Monte Carlo, and there was a Ford Taurus, Thunderbird. They all looked the same. The front fenders, the doors, the rear quarters, and the deck lid, and even the hood in some cases, were all made in the shop. You know, you could roll your own fenders. You could buy fenders if you want to, or you can make your own. Hell of a lot cheaper to make a rolled aluminum fender than it is to make or to buy a five-star fiberglass fender.
Right.
And the way that late model racing is today, I do not feel that there's a need for as stringent of body rules. Unless there are stringent body rules, then you need to adhere to them.
Right.
If they're there, you got to go by them.
Right.
If they're not there, I would be fine if you eliminated 80% of the rules in the body. I'm okay.
Well, then
with
you got to throw the templates away, is what you're saying.
And that's,
you can use the body, but throw away the templates.
There we go.
But get ready, you're going to come out with some space age looking stuff using the same body parts.
I mean, if you have a general set of measurements that you can't go past, that you can't do, you know, if you have a general set of measurements, there's no reason why you can't roll your own fenders. There's no reason why you can't roll your own doors.
Yeah, I know.
There's no reason why you can't make your own rocker panels.
Rob McDonnell is who I point at in the All-Star Series back in the day.
Yeah, and Jason Shaw and all those guys.
Robbie always had a really good-looking race car. Those guys worked very hard on it. But Rob always tended to have the odd aerodynamic something. Whether the roof was at the right height, but was it at the right pitch? The fenders, he added like this little wee wicker bill.
Yeah.
He added a little fin down the rear window. He did this. He did that. He was the first guy to come out with the dirt nose that wasn't really a dirt nose.
They were called the high downforce. In between. They were called the high downforce.
So it looked different. It worked different. And you know what? We couldn't allow it. We couldn't disallow it. So we had to make the choice and just say, look, it doesn't look right. Take it off. And those guys did a lot of work to put it on, but they put it on for a reason. I used that as the example. If you leave it open-ended, and we were open-ended because we weren't using the templates, we had height restrictions, measurements. This had to be there. That had to be there. But they manipulated them, and the 72 team was awesome at manipulating them and winning.
Yeah.
So, did he win because of the manipulation, or could you have stripped all that away and he still win? Therein lies the question. But we got to take our final break. When we come back, we got lots more. We're going to hear from Todd Gilliland on the other side of the break. He won his first truck race. He had some words for Kyle Busch as well. And you're going to hear what he has to say about those words that he happened to mention to Kyle as he crossed the start-finish line. If you don't know what I'm talking about, stay with us. We will explain.
You're a troublemaker. You're a troublemaker. You ain't nothing but a troublemaker, girl.
You had me hooked again from the minute you sat down.
From coast to coast, you're listening to Canada Talks.
Canada Talks.
The NFL is on SiriusXM. Listen to every game from the preseason through Super Bowl 53 on your radio.
Here we go. Tackle football. Let's play.
And remember, your hometown broadcast is always available on the SiriusXM app. When you're at home, turn down the TV volume and stream the game on your phone and SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. And when your team isn't playing, follow the National Football League 24-7 on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Channel 88.
Broadcasting live from the track.
We're here to get trophies.
Never give up, baby.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 90 is your home for all things NASCAR.
The yellow lights come on. And
Perfect!
Everything's happening so fast.
Every race.
Hard contact into the safer barrier.
Exclusive interviews.
This is more than just a job. We don't get caught up in being famous.
The only broadcasting outlet in the world delivering NASCAR 24/7, 365.
Thank you. You are the man.
SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Channel 90.
Racetime Radio is fueled by BP Race Fuels, the worldwide leader in race fuel technology. Dawson Dental Centers. Get your victory lane smile at DawsonDental.ca.
MAP TV, the only network dedicated to all things motorsports, is racing across Canada now. The only network destination of all things motorsports. MAV TV offers every type of motorsports racing. With grassroots racing events from across the country and around the world, MAV TV's programming schedule is truly second to none. MAV TV Canada. Contact your TV provider for availability now.
If you've got the need for speed,
they're racing door to door in turn four.
Then you've come to the right place.
It's Race Time Radio
with your host, Joe Chisholm.
And we are back with you live tonight on Race Time Radio. Little Ked bringing us back off the break. Hello, Ked. Hope you're listening in, buddy. Let me see here. The Martinsville Speedway was the scene for this weekend's truck series. They were back on track. Junior, that was a wild truck race.
It was. It was a great truck
race.
It
was a really good one.
It was. There was carnage, that we never like to see, but we have fun watching it.
Brett Moffitt was up there a lot of the day.
Yeah.
That guy
seemed like
good.
Everybody that was in the championship hunt just threw their chances away. That was just part of the theme. It seems like every year there's always that one race.
Yeah.
Where everybody that's in the hunt just says, screw it. Let's be mindless today. And Martinsville was definitely one of them. You know, the past couple of years we've seen that same type of thing with the Xfinity Series at Phoenix, right? At ISM Raceway. But in the Truck Series this weekend, you got a hats off to really both KBM drivers. I know it didn't end well for Harrison Burton, but ended very well for Todd Gilliland picking up his first win. In the Truck Series after 46 starts. That's a big win for the young lad. And, it was a popular win across the garage area.
Sure.
And we're going to get into why after we hear from him.
Yeah, here he is, the compliments of NASCAR Media Group. Here's Todd Gilliland in the media center after the big win of the NASCAR Hall of Fame 200.
Yeah, what a race. I'd say we didn't have quite the speed just overall. To start the race, I was really tight. We made one pit stop and made it a lot better, where I could contend for probably top five. And then we were in a wreck, knocked the nose in, knocked the whole right side in. We were going to stay out, but we decided the tires were going to probably rub. So we came in and got four fresh tires and made even more adjustments. And, I think we made our truck a ton better throughout the race. Played the pace of their whole race really well. After we got that last set last set of tires. Just picked people off kind of methodically, and, you know, 40 laps is a long time here, even at the end when we were up in, like, fourth or fifth. So just about controlling it from there and you know, just being smart.
And then after the race, I didn't see the actual end of it. No one did. From what I can understand, the FS1 TV signal for the last two races, or for the last two laps, went dark. Now, you could hear a production microphone feed, I guess you will, so you knew what was happening, but you couldn't see it. At least we couldn't see it. And if you look at Twitter, it'll tell you that I don't think anybody's seen it.
They didn't.
But, you know, it was just one of those faux pas or whatever. But, Junior, you were you seen a tweet,
yeah,
that had some audio that was pretty explicit.
Yeah.
Todd Gilliland went and you played it. We can't play it for you on the air here, but it was pretty explicit. He told Kyle Busch that he could stay in his beep trailer.
Motorhome.
Yeah, a motorhome, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could just stay in your motorhome, yeah. With a couple adjectives in there. And it was definitely, there's no secret, Kyle Busch has been pushing on his teams to win.
100%.
And he's been pushing on them to win for a long time because he, in Kyle's opinion, and I don't think he's wrong, he's given these guys the equipment to win with.
Yes.
But he is pushing maybe a tad hard, some could say.
Yeah. So here's the transcript, right? He said, Todd Gilliland, he crosses the start-finish line, and he said, you guys are the best. Kyle Busch, you stay in your bleeping motorhome. That's what he said.
Yeah.
A little bit of backstory. Earlier on in the year, in a press conference, Kyle Busch said Todd Gilliland's days are numbered in a race car if he can't perform and he can't win. And pointed the same finger at Harrison Burton. A lot of people were very shocked by that. You know, a lot of people were taken back by it. Very controversial.
Yeah, yeah.
But for a car owner to blatantly call somebody out in, you know, a media source and in a formal way like that, was accepted by some and pushed back on by others. And I think, you know, he's always a polarizing guy, but just the way in which he did it, they're both young guys, they're both development guys. You know, they're both you know, respected in the garage area. They come from respected families. Of course, David Gilliland and Jeff Burton, Harrison Burton is as well looped into this. There was no qualms, and I don't think anybody, you know, Todd never came out with a formal rebuttal to that. He never did.
Kyle initially said it?
Yeah, when Kyle initially said it.
Yeah, because he, you know, responds to this.
He glossed over.
And I've got it.
He glossed over the fact that Kyle Busch, you know, called him out. But I don't think that anybody in racing, you know, would say that that didn't piss him off. Yeah. In the worst way.
Yeah.
And I think it would piss anybody off, you know, if Joe Gibbs stood on top of the pit box and called Kyle Busch out like that, you know, it would be very polarizing. And you know, even more so the fact that it's a development kid that, you know, is in there and you're an established racer. So, you know, it's interesting, but here is what Todd Gilliland had to say about the matter after, you know, in the media center, after his head kind of cooled off.
It was just kind of heat of the moment, really. Just a lot of emotions. Everyone's heard what he said, and obviously it's true. We should have been running better. I've wanted to win for the last year and a half as well. I'm doing all I can, and the guys at the shop are, you know. So it was pretty much just heat of the moment. Probably wish I didn't say it now, but it is what it is. He said some stuff about me. It is what it is.
And that's the way it is what it is. But, you know, what I take away from that, Junior, when I heard what he said as he crossed the start-finish line, I know I myself was going, good for you, Todd. If the guy can call you out,
yeah,
you should be able to, without any repercussions, be able to put him in his place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I wouldn't apologize for it if I was Todd.
No, and I don't think he did.
No.
I don't think he does.
It is what it is, and we'll move on.
Yeah.
He's a proven winner in NASCAR, and he did it in a KBM truck.
Yeah.
And that is all that really needs to be said.
Yeah.
Other than, for God's sakes, you are dealing with human beings.
Yeah.
And you don't need to add more pressure to them. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe that's how why Kyle Busch performs so well is, you know, more pressure than that has been added to Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
And it's maybe in Kyle's opinion, maybe that is what has made him the fierce competitor that he is.
Yeah.
But you know what? Even Kyle Busch wasn't across the start finish line this weekend as the winner.
Yeah.
It was Martin Truex. So, Kyle Busch, go back and do your homework. Go back and do your homework. Like, why weren't you? If you use the same adage that Kyle's using,
yeah,
then Kyle better take a little swig of his own medicine there.
Yeah.
Because he didn't win.
Yeah.
And he hasn't won in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think the biggest thing is that...
Don't throw stones when you live in a glass house is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And when you look at, you know, the pressure that is being put on those kids already, those guys already, if you didn't make it to that level without putting a ton of pressure on yourself anyways, you know.
No.
And I don't think that, you know... I take it as, you know, I come from a sales background, right? I've had a lot of jobs in the sales end of things, and there's no good sales reps that are, you know, that are fully fed.
Yeah.
You know, and there needs to be, the fire needs to be stoked sometimes, and you need to go out and perform. And the same thing at a professional level in motorsports, you know, you do need to perform.
They do, but I wouldn't call Kyle Busch's stuff motivating.
Absolutely
I wouldn't
not.
Call that motivating.
Exactly.
I call that counterproductive. But, that's not the way you motivate somebody.
That's just poor management, right?
Yeah.
When you look at it.
That didn't get Todd his win this weekend.
No.
Not by calling him out.
No. Todd wanted that win, and he went out and got it.
Yeah.
And... You know,
a bunch of other cards had to fall for Todd to have that win.
Yeah, 100%. And he didn't have the best truck there.
Nah.
I don't think that he did.
No.
I think the best truck there was...
The 24.
The 24 and the 45 were both really good trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And they both took damage, and they both, you know, they were the fastest, too. So, I mean, you got to be there at the end. Todd Gilliland is a decorated... short track racer. He's won a ton of races in the K&N West Series.
He's won
a ton of races in the K&N East Series. He's won a ton of late model races. He's a skilled driver.
And now he's a truck
now
winner.
Now he's a truck winner. So hats off, and that's definitely pretty cool.
Yeah, it sure is. I had fully anticipated on giving you some tips on how to get into this sport. And, Junior, I look at the clock, and that's it. We ran out of time. We haven't got enough time to do that. We consumed
Thank
the rest
God
of
we
the
got
time.
All winter.
Yes, we got lots of
we
time.
We got all winter.
And I know we look forward to next week's show. We'll get you some guests on here. I thought I'd try and open it up this week and just get some opinion on here. Felt kind of good. Hope you enjoyed it. I know we enjoyed telling you what we've got and what always highlights us. You can always reach us via Twitter at Racetime Radio or on Facebook. Just search Racetime Radio. Love to hear your comments, and sure hope you can join us again next week here on Racetime. Got to thank Scotty in the Toronto studio. Got to thank Susie Q right here in the Racetime Radio studio. But that, my friends, is going to do it for us here tonight on Racetime. Sure appreciate you dropping by. Tell your friends, and we're going to be with you all off-season long, all the way around. And we're going to talk racing and get you prepared for what's still to come in 2020. This never stops. We love this sport, and we sure are glad that you're part of it. We'll talk to you soon. Have a safe week, everybody. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to Racetime Radio. Visit us on the web at www.racetimeradio.com or leave a
a message on our 24-hour listener hotline. 1-888-5-RACETIME. That's 1-888-572-2384. We hope you'll join us again next time for more Race Time Radio.
Come on now, dig.
Exclusively on your home for the hardcore race fan.
Excellent, buddy, excellent.